Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, we need some help. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. This is the voice of MPH Radio. Today, date the 26th of August, 2023. Our theme is Reliving Our Past. Are we really reliving our past? That's possible. We'd like to have that dialogue with you today as you call in at 818-337-0016. That will be our future dialogue today. Reliving our past. But before we get to that point, like always on MPH Radio, we want to give you something to think about, followed by MPH Black Men in Facts with Susie. We have a message or a voice from France with our sister Wincy Dendra, followed by a discussion on that theme, and we will close out the program with a message from Alex. That will be the order of the day. We encourage you to get a pen and piece of paper, sit back, relax, take in some information and share some information. We'd like to have your participation. So the way we're going to do this thing right now, as we continue to travel down the road, of filling in our missing pages of history, we want to give you something to think about. And that something to think about is the concept of freedom. Freedom is something that I fought over, died over, people continue to fight over. I think it's become important for us to try to get a better understanding of what is this concept we call freedom. I will just give you one particular conception wise of how one may define freedom, which is having the ability or the abilities and means to control those necessities for life. Think about that. Freedom is having the ability and means to control those necessities for life. And we're talking about that in the context as a group. Think about that later on. If you'd like to comment on this segment on what is freedom, you'll be welcome to do that. But right now, take out your pen and your paper or pencil and MPH for the week of the 20th through 26th of August. We're going to bring in our sister Susie, and she can share with you the MPH Black Mini Facts. Susie, at this point in time, we can turn the mic over to you. Welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. Today I'll begin you the Black Mini Facts from the PRSP calendar of 2021. First, we'll start with August the 20th, where we had Africans brought to Jamestown, Virginia, beginning U.S. slavery in 1619. And also on that date, we had the Wilberforce University established in Wilberforce, Ohio in 1856. On the 21st of August, we had the first major successful African liberation struggle begin in San Domingo, Haiti in 1791. Also on that date, Nat Turner led largest slave revolt in Southampton, Virginia in 1831. And last, on the 21st, Soledad brother George Jackson murdered by U.S. fascist prison guards in 1971. On the 22nd, we have Fisk University Incorporated in 1867. On the 23rd, O. Brown patented the horseshoe in 1892. And last for August, the week of the 20th through the 26th, SWAPO began its armed struggle in Namibia in 1966. I've just given you a few mini black facts from the PRSP calendar of 2021.
Thank you, Susie, for your MPH Black Mini Facts. We're now going to do something that we're going to be doing from time to time. We will have special features as part of our programming, and we'd like to get to know and find out perspectives from around the world. And one of the individuals that we have engaged in recently, who is willing to share her skills and her talent, she lives in France, and right now we're in French education in Portugal. We have with us Sister Wentz. And she's going to share with us today a message or a voice from France. And we're going to turn this mic over to Sister Winks and let her share her message. Sister Winks, welcome to MPH Radio. What is your message today for our listening audience out of France? The mic is yours, Sister Winks. You may speak now.
Hello?
Yes, you can speak
hello?
Now.
Hello?
Speak. Yes, we hear you.
Hello?
Yes, you can speak
yes?
now, Wentz. Go and speak. Make your statement.
I will create in 2026 my foundation in order to care the New York State or state in America and New York City. And I will propose an idea, an action, a graphic, an issues for communication,
as it went in terms of, can you give us some kind of perspective? What's going on in France? How do the French people view the people in the West? Just give us your perspective. What's going on in France and what's going on in your world?
The difference between France and the USA?
Can you share with our listening audience what's going on in France from your perspective? What's going on in France?
France, my country, France, is in bad state, but the left is raising more supporters than before over all the Socialist Party.
Okay, is there anything that is, how would you describe race relationship today in France? As you talk about the French people and minority people who live in France and come to France, what is the social relationship like today in France between those different types of populations?
Macron doesn't listen to the population. The Socialist Party is creating a space for ideas. This party is good for the polls for the European election the next year.
Okay, in terms of the parties in France, can you list the different parties, political parties in France? Who are or what are some of the parties in France that we need to be aware of?
I know Anne Hidalgo, my mayor of Paris, and she's very ecologic, very kind with the people. She prepared Paris 2024.
Okay, now, what is your opinion, or what is the opinion and attitude of France as it relates to U.S. foreign policy? How do the French policy, foreign policy, and U.S. policy, how are they similar and how are they different?
The same policy in the USA in report to France is the protection for the underage for alcohol, tobacco, for example. But to U.S., when we are protected by justice, or we can run for office, but in France, we can't run for office even if we are responsive of or act. But when we are under protection by the justice.
How would you describe the government's relationship in France with the governments in Africa today? How would you describe the relationship with the French government with the governments in Africa today? There seems to be a lot of tension and rejection of French policies and behavior in Africa. What would be your response to that phenomenon?
The government in France, the westernmost, for example, the drugged people will be more punished, but it's not a good idea. The retirement was a cataclysm for the people and government, and more politics in France are bad for the country.
Okay, with last question for this particular segment, talk to the American people in terms of what they need to know if they choose to come to France. What should they expect? Talk to the American people. What do we need to know if one decides to come and visit France?
I believe France need disabled people like me because I have a high intellectual potential and I am borderline, but I have a great ideas and I will promote with the Socialist Party my best ideas.
Okay, you were speaking to and listening to that sister from France, with Gentry of France, and she's a writer, she's an artist, she has many skills. From time to time, she will be featuring some thoughts as we talk about and look at what's going on in our world. And we'd like to thank her for taking a few minutes of her time, sharing her perspectives and some of the questions that we wanted to know more about what the current conditions is like in France. We'd like to thank our sister and Sister Wentz. We thank you very much. We thank you.
Thank you.
All right. This is MPH Radio. What we're going to do right now, we're going to pause for the calls. We're going to listen to some music, and when we come back, we continue to travel down this road of our theme today, reliving our past. If that's possible, what can we draw from this? We're going to do that when we return. This is MPH, the voice of MPH Radio. We'll be right back. We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio on the 26th day of August, 2023. We're going into a major discussion for this particular program as it relates to our topic today or our theme, reliving our past. You know, they often say history best reward those who research. And sometimes look at you experience things and see things where you seem like you have experienced it before. At this particular day and time, when we talk about reliving our past, are we truly reliving our past? And if so, how can we make the end result different if we know it was a part of what took place before? Would that seem to put us in a better position to make better decisions and have different outcomes? For example, when we look at what's going on in Africa and the West and Europe, France, U.S., and the European powers see us trying to dominate and control the African people resources, their labor in the continent of Africa. There are walls being fought, there are coups are being created all over the continent for the interest of Europe to continue its domination over Africa and African people. Does that remind you of the same battle that took place during the Berlin Conference in 1884-85, where the European powers came together and decided that they were going to seal Africa's fate by total domination and destruction and control? And this is what's taking place today. This weekend, TPI is celebrating the 60th anniversary of the 1963 March on Washington. If I recall correctly, and my understanding of my history, when we talk about the cause and motivation and the stimulation for such a gathering, African people and people who have been locked out of the system have been fighting for years for freedom, justice, and equality. They've been fighting for better job care, being able to be employed, being able to have proper, decent housing, being able to be treated as equal, fighting police brutality back then. And see, like, these are the same things that we're fighting for now. Are we reliving our past? What did y'all think? When we talk about laws and bills, many people don't understand how laws are made and how laws can impact a community, a people, a person, a whole society. They don't recognize how laws can be laws that can advance a people or advance a community, or it can be laws that will destabilize the community, taking people or community backwards. We want to have a little discussion about bills and its implications and how it can be used positively and negatively in terms of this question. Are we reliving our past? We're seeing new laws made with the same results. We see there's a lot of gerrymandering now as part of the political game. There's a lot of means of disenfranchising African people and people non-Europeans. There's now that for some institution, race is no longer a criteria for admission. You can't include that. Are we reliving our past? So we would like to have that discussion with everyone who's listening and encourage you to call in at 818-337-0016. We'd like to hear your perspective. You can do that by hitting 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. So let's just have this little dialogue. Is it really true? The more things change, the more they remain the same. And how can that be? So I'm going to open this thing up right now to my co-host, Brother Alex. I'd like to get some of your thoughts on this whole concept or some of the issues or points that I just raised, Brother Alex. And that theme is Are we reliving our past? Give me your thoughts, Brother Alex.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lee, for opening up a program that has been on my mind for a good little bit, because these are some discussions we need to be having, because it seems like we are taking steps backwards and not forward. And I mean as a culture, as a people, and as a society in whole. Progress of a people has to come from leaders. Leaders come forward in time, in the moment needed. And we call these men heroes. And we've known quite a few in our time. And if it had been for the Nat Turners, had it not been for the Harriet Tubmans, had it not been for the Du Boises, had it not been for the Douglas, had it not been for the King family, had it not been for Malcolm X, had it not been for many that had fought for the justice of not just one people's people, but for all people. Because what they were trying to do was open up our eyes, just as what happened in that Berlin conference in 1884, when there was a race to carve up Africa, to make sure that each European nation could get their hands on the piece of the pie in Africa. You know, this is strange because, you know, we're looking at a time coming out of the Civil War here in America, and they were still thinking about further colonialism of Africa, exploiting it itself. They had exploited the people, had kidnapped them and chained them up and brought them over to America and South America and all parts of Europe and Asia and everywhere else. But they weren't satisfied with the labor resources that they had taken from Africa. No, they needed the mineral resources. They needed to be in power to tell these nations what to do with their people themselves, to govern them. So, again, the fight is in Africa today, trying to carve it up by mostly European nations and just to see what they can get out of it. And the people are tired in Africa, and they are beginning to kick some of them out, as the Nimzaleed, because they see they have no purpose there. They have no intent but to do harm to the people. But when the second point you mentioned, and this is the point that is overwhelming to me, because of all people I should be there today, but because of business, as they say, you got to keep food on the table and turn on the house and gas in the car, I couldn't be with my brothers there in Washington, D.C. I've been before. I even was there with my own son to make him understand how important it was to stand there and be a light seen by many others and to be seen all over the world that you were doing something in unison to make a change in your home called America. Now, how much of a home was it? Well, think about it. We take care of our yards. We take care of our cars. We take care of ourselves. But do we take care of our freedoms? Do we take care of our laws? Do we take care of our justice? See, we got to stand up. We can't be mowed over. We can't be ridiculed and looked upon as second-class citizens. So we got to understand that unity in numbers is more about being out there on the mall and listening to speakers. Because once the show is over, that's when the hard work happened to come. See, I'm an old activist. I'm not a Johnny come lately. I've been in the game a long time. I've been standing up for rights as long as I can almost remember, because I knew it was right. Something about that word that said colored only, that phrase, and something about that phrase that said white only stuck in my mind. Why I couldn't go to the other side, but they could come over to my side, but I could never go to their side. It stuck with me, and I knew it was wrong, and I had to change that. And then if we look at the power of what we call a bill, oh, I could go on forever, because there's a lot that makes a bill. It's a whole lot of paperwork there involved, a whole lot of tussling, tug of war, pushing, pulling, debating, arguing, in heated debate. That's what a bill is all about. They have drawn guns in Congress on each other, whipped each other with a stick. I mean, it has gone crazy just to get things passed. You know, trying to be fair to someone is a hard thing for some. We see it as easy. If I got an apple and if I cut it in half, then we both have an equal share. At what point do I think I take three quarters of the apple and I give you a quarter and I say that that's fair? But that's how bills and laws are made. Sometimes the majority ruling party does not care for the ones that support the country the most. And then we have to look at everything else that this country looks at and how they look at us and how they view us. And when we have black people, African Americans, Negroes, whatever you want to call yourself, American, I have no qualm with anything. But I do take offense that when your bloodline is from the ancestors and you deny it and you turn your back on the other ones that are out there trying to secure your freedom, and you join forces with those who cared nothing for you, and then they leave you high and dry. They abandon you in your most time of need because you've been used. Now, we got a bunch of names for people that relate to the other side, who do everything they can to destroy their own culture, their own people. Or they get on podcasts and talk shows. And they talk down against African Americans and black people and Negroes, because they say even though their color is as dark as can be, they still don't want to be considered black, African American, colored, Negro. That for some reason, they want to be considered something else, that they're ashamed to be black. So we got a lot of issues here to address today. And I just thank you, Mr. Lee, once again, for touching on subjects that we need to talk about. You know, we can't hide this stuff, you know, in the barbershop conversations. We can't hide this stuff, you know, at family reunions. You know, we can't hide this stuff, you know, on our job. We can't hide it because we are in front and center of what happens in this nation. So, yes, our voting rights are being attacked. Our civil rights are being attacked. Our social rights are being attacked. But what will you do to step forward? Because we need leaders, not pleaders. I've heard it from a lot of pleaders in my lifetime. But I want to hear from leaders, because from leaders come bleeders. Of the struggle for freedom, you're going to suffer some pain in doing so. It's a hurtful thing, but it's the right thing, and it's God's plan. And I turn it back to you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Adams. We will bring in Susan for MPH Radio and just get her general thought on this issue. Are we reliving our past? No response, Susan.
Okay, my response is I think it's a good thing that we had to march today, because basically for three reasons. Excuse me. One, Martin Luther King dream, it still remains a source of strength and inspiration, which is what we need more now than we have even in the past. Then the fact that basically his message is fading. And also, we need to let people know that there is an urgency now. So by providing this march and people getting together, a lot of them, and even a lot of the young folks are even getting more familiar with them than they have in the past. And basically, that's pretty much all I have to say. Mr. Jordan pretty much covered a lot of the issues of really what the past is involving us.
All right, thank you, Susan. We are discussing our theme today, reliving our past. We'd like to hear your position on this. You can do that by calling in at 818-337-0016. At this point in time, we can go to our listening audience, and we can bring in caller 6029, caller 6029. Earlier, I sort of gave you a parallel of the historical realities of what we have gone through, and how they parallel today what we are going through. I would like to have your perspectives on this question of whether or not are we reliving our past, and if so, how do we use our past as a tool to have a different outcome? As you say, Carlo, you can see the continuation for the struggle for Africa, African people, labor, resources, as it relates to what's going on in Niger and throughout African countries, so the Western who plot coups against African leadership, not only Africa, but throughout the world. You can look at Carla, this whole question on this march on Washington. Seems like the same thing the march is asking for doing 60 years ago is the same thing we're asking for today. What has changed, Carla, in this question of power and how to use their power through paper, to build, to laws, to impact communities, to impact people? Let's just have an honest, frank discussion. Are we reliving our past? What you think, Carla, 6029?
Well, I think that one of the things I think is very important that we underscore is this notion in terms of the importance of understanding history. Now, one of the problems is that people tend to believe that by recognizing or understanding the history, that you're somehow immersed or trapped in that history, which it prepares you to move forward. But the reasoning is all wrong, because one of the things, in order to move forward, what you fundamentally have to understand is historically how things have operated. And it's precisely because we don't understand historically how things are operated, we find ourselves in such a predicament today. Because even in the 21st century, most of our people still don't have a fundamental grasp in terms of the history. And so when you talk about the fundamental injustices that inflict African people in the society, most of our people don't even understand the nature or the systemic roots of that, for lack of a better term, that kind of victimization. So clearly understanding the history is very, very key in terms of moving forward. It doesn't mean you know, that you use history in such a way that its time is your desire to move forward. On the contrary, it shows people in terms of the pitfalls in terms of historical context. Using this historical context to move forward by understanding that the pitfalls of the past is a serves as a guide in terms of which way to maneuver forward. And so, therefore, it's important in terms of understanding, just in terms of systems, that we understand in terms of how we maneuver is very, very key. And I think one of the more difficult aspects in terms of the movement is getting our people to understand fundamentally how do we maneuver forward. We have various ideas in terms of how do we move forward. But the bottom line that we have to first and foremost challenge the system as it currently exists. If, in fact, we seek to work within that system, then the bottom line is that, you know, the bottom line is that the kind of change that you seek is simply not possible. Because let's keep in mind that people in positions of power who innovate these policies or who create who are part of these institutions that govern life in American society as well as throughout the world, these people also understand that what they do strategically is very, very important in terms of maintaining control. In that regard, they understand quite well the flow of history and why understanding history is so important in terms of maintaining the oppression of African people and others and other people as well. So clearly, we have to understand, you know, this whole historical flow. And when we talk about the situation in Africa and we talk about the historical injustices, the great thing about what's happening currently in Nigeria is that it's a sort of a reawakening in which people are beginning to understand, you know, that this historical process in terms of exploitation, the marginalization and repression of African states has been going on for centuries. And the realization is that somehow by turning it up, by looking the other way, it hasn't been effective in terms of reducing the kind of injustices inflicted upon Africa. So now there's a realization that you have to stand up and be accountable. So I think in that regard, I mean, it tends to affect, you know, not just people on the continent, but people throughout the world who get a fundamental sense in terms of the systematic or systemic injustices affiliated with a system which, by and large, rewards a small proportion of the world's population at the expense of the majority of the world's population. So in that thing, in that regard, I think it's important that that what's happening in Nigeria is so crucial in terms of, again, the overall understanding, in terms of, not only in terms of the importance of history, but also the importance in terms of actually standing up, innovating policy, innovating strategy to move forward. And in closing, I'll simply say that one thing, just in terms of implementing strategy to move forward, without an adequate understanding in terms of historical processes, the bottom line is that when you go in terms of trying to move forward, it's impossible if you don't understand the historical strategies that historically have been used in terms of the oppression of a people. So history is important in terms of us moving forward. Without that understanding of history, it complicates our ability to move forward. And I encourage people to understand history as much as possible, after learning history, to move forward in organizations to create the kind of paradigm we like to see, you know, in this life. And I'll close with that.
Stay put, caller. Thank you for your input. We'll go to our next caller. Last four numbers are 4298. 4298, welcome to MPH Radio. I believe this is my brother Moses. I'd like to welcome him live out of D.C. What's the conditions like up in D.C., brother Moses?
Thank you, brother Lee. I'm here in Anacostia, 2002 Martin Luther King Avenue, Southeast Washington, D.C., Bus Boys and Poets, where they are live streaming the March on Washington straight from the Lincoln Memorial being live streamed here. It's so noisy inside that I can't hear you and be heard over the stream, the live streaming, so I'm outside on the porch. But there's some usual suspects, Lucy Murphy and Kamau Benjamin, I've recognized here. There's a atmosphere of revolutionary fervor, I would say, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Brother Moses, can you pull out one, two individuals from who may be there? Actually, they got about 3-4 minutes to come out and talk to us a little bit about this event that's going on and why they are participating. Can you find me one, two people and come on back to me?
You said you want me to get somebody?
Yeah, find one, two people, tell them if you just interview them, talk to them for two, 3 minutes. We do a live video. And you can call Kamal, Bishop Murphy, anybody else.
See if I can get him to come outside because I can't, you can't hear him in there. Yeah. I'll see if you get him. All right.
Okay. Well, I wait for Brother Moses, who is a live reporter today up in Washington, D.C. at Busboard and Ford. They're commemorating and celebrating the 60th anniversary of the 1963 March on Washington. While we wait for our brother Moses to come back, we're going to take this other caller and get this caller perspective on. Are we reliving our past? Why does there seem to be so many parallel things that has happened in the past that are the same things that are going on today? You can bring in our caller, 7236. Welcome to MPH Radio. Caller 7236. No response to are we reliving our past?
Thank you so much for taking my call. Actually, you see that today there's a major march on Washington, and where people need to be, every able body, is to be on the mall. They need to be on the mall and showing a presence. You know, when there was the immigrant march on Washington, there were hundreds of thousands of people there. But if you look at there are many people on the mall today. But I think that what we see is some kind of bourgeois elitism, that if you're sitting up having lunch live streaming, how much the world has changed. Because I think presence is the key. You know, right now, African Americans in the United States of America, women, as well as Alaskan women and indigenous women, have the highest infant mortality rate on the planet. You hear people discuss us as an anomaly today. Now, you talked about the Belgian conference. Well, Leopold organized it. And at that time, because of the proximity in terms of time to the Civil War, the U.S. chose not to take colonies, as did Switzerland. But look how far we've not come, 180 degrees. The U.S. had military presence throughout Africa, as does the EU and Great Britain. And we see that the CFR, the currency, colonial currency, is still in the move. But what we see is a real revolutionary move by African nations themselves establishing the BRIC, the BRIC, which will develop a new currency where it will not be dependent on the dollar. The dollar is no longer reliable when you see how a plane was annexed in Venezuela, when you see how Citgo has been annexed and sold, being sold off the several thousand gas stations and the refineries are being sold off. What nation has the right to take the property of a solvent nation or anyone else? So you see that there is a real struggle that we're facing. The petty bourgeoisie must remember that just because they have good jobs and making good money or a comfortable retirement, be present. Let the world know that Black Americans, African Americans are standing strong, shoulder to shoulder, that we're willing to take the heat on this August day. You know, in 1963, there were 250,000 people who had traveled and it was difficult for Africans to travel through the United States. It was more dangerous than even now. Well, I would say no, it wasn't, because there weren't 1,600 of us being killed every year for virtually driving, and you weren't didn't have to face death in an ordinary traffic stop for missing a light or having a missing license plate. But the reality is the people are moving forward. It seems that it is difficult, and education and politicizing people is the most important thing. When you hear someone talking about the usual suspects, then they're talking about people that they socialize with and fail to see the masses. So that reminds me of the abolition movement. You ask someone, who was the greatest abolitionist? And they'll say Frederick Douglass. And I would dare to say that he was the most photographed man of the 19th century. And he was a great orator. But the greatest abolitionist we will never know, because it was the slaves themselves. The slaves themselves who were the great abolitionists. They were who General Harriet Tubman was leading, because the slaves hid people in caves and swamps that the whites didn't even know about. It was the indigenous people. Look at the state of New York, where there are all those caves that no one knew of, and that was a part of freedom, the freedom travel to Canada. Look at the swamps that Harriet Tubman used, going from Maryland to Delaware, going from Maryland to Pennsylvania to Delaware, back in Pennsylvania, just to get us home to Philadelphia, to freedom. So I would say that, yes, we are moving forward, but we've become lazy and comfortable. It seems that some people were only interested in arriving themselves economically and forgot to look at the greater picture. That, for example, this week in California, laws were passed that will take away a person's rights and allow the state to drug them as it sees necessary. Or as we speak, that 7 persons were just shot up in mass at a Caribbean festival. Or that, as we saw last week in Covington, at Covington in Tennessee, there were 7 other people shot. But we saw something great happen also in Tennessee. The 2 revolutionary youth that were not the usual suspects, but they're the new vanguard, were reelected by a popular majority. And so we see that even though voting is a reform, it can be effective. And you were talking about legislation. Well, legislation is a few words, 150 words or less, and it becomes a bill. And from there, it becomes an act. A bill is a proposed law. An act, when passed, is a law. So we need to stand up and make a voting act the new federal law, so that the descendants of chattel slavery will no longer have to depend on Congress every 20 or so years to reify their right to vote. So thank you so much for this brief.
We appreciate your hold. We may come back to you later. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
I think we have Brother Moses back. Brother Moses, are you back? Can you hear us, Brother Moses?
Hello?
Hopefully he may be back. Yes, Brother Moses, do you have anyone for us?
No, everybody's kind of mesmerized, eating and mesmerized by the march on Washington and speeches that are going on right now.
No problem. We'll move forward. We thought you might be able to find 1 or 2 people, but we'll continue to move forward. No problem. You find someone, just interject yourself in a conversation and let us know. We'd be interested to hear some perspectives up in D.C. as they continue to highlight and commemorate 50 years of this anniversary. And it'd be interesting that the same contradictions and problems just then that seemingly all exist today. So what do we make of that? But coming back to Brother Alex. Brother Alex, yeah, I thought something really interesting when we talk about reading the past. I thought it would be interesting if you look at how things are being played out today. You know, when we talk about back in the day when they had law enforcement, they called slave catchers, versus, you know, police officers today, they had the same role and responsibility of protecting property more than anything and keeping law and order. There was nothing about, you know, general crime, what have you. But anyway, I want to ask you about this whole question of how bills and laws can be used to impact and shape the community of people, even a person, in terms of how money can be allocated through laws and people to understand the nuances of how the game is played. Can you give our listening audience a little bit of history of how laws and bills are written and what is written into a law and how people can allocate money through bills to benefit certain projects, certain groups, certain companies, et cetera. You familiar with that game, Brother Alex? Talk to the people.
Yes, again, thank you, Mr. Lee. And, you know, what we have to realize that when a bill is passed in identical form by both the Senate and House, it is sent to the president for his signature. If the president signs the bill, it becomes law. Laws are known, as our other caller called in, as acts of Congress. Statute is another word that is used interchangeably with the law. So we have to know statute as well as the act, as well as the bill. As I said, laws, bills, acts, statutes, everything is confusing to the everyday layman. So we have to play the game a little bit different. We have to be a little bit more creative to get what we need past. When you get an opportunity to be with governors and senators and House of Representatives, they have been picked by a vote. That vote is supposed to come from the community. That community passes on whatever ideas as constituents to that representative, be he senator, be he representative, be he governor, be he mayor, be he city councilman, alderman. These are your representatives. This is the ground force of activism. You know, we can walk, and we can talk, and we can shout, we can scratch the top of our heads, we can rub our behinds, but that won't pass any law. You know, the game is played on the field called money. If you have M-O-N-E-Y, you can almost pass anything, good or bad. It don't matter. People are bought and sold, just as any of the Supreme Court justices sitting up there. They're bought and sold. Congressmen, bought and sold. Representatives, bought and sold. Mayors, bought and sold. Governors, bought and sold. Lobbyists come in with ideas to say, help my people. Not the best ideas, because the answers are in the companies. The answers are not in the labor force and the workers. They don't care about the health concerns that these companies are going to bring into. They don't look at the environmental concerns that are going to happen from these big companies. They only see tax revenue. They see jobs. They see income taxes. They see retirement plans. They see assets. He has something that we don't know about in the black community like we should, something we don't talk about, how to save, how to join together, how to build, how to network. See, this is a capitalist country. Most of the world is ran on capitalism. It's a bad thing to process because the people are left out. And when we talk about these laws and getting them passed and everything, they say, write your congressman. Call your congressman. Tell them how you feel. Some of them will listen that aren't bought and sold. And we have good congressmen. We have good governors. But like anyone else, you need to be in their face. If you're not, then everything seems okay to them because the lobbyists are always pulling them the other way. Special interest groups, PACs. There are so many things out here that affect how a law, an act, and statutes are even carried out. The law could say one thing, and a judge can do another, or totally throw it out. It can be reversed, as we see with affirmative action and Roe versus Wade. So it doesn't mean anything that a law is sort of written in stone, because somebody's out there willing to break that stone and tear that law down. So we have to be creative, and we have to come up with partisan plans that work on both sides of the aisle, that is fair to everyone. And that's a hard word. Just go in the courthouse, and you don't see fairness. You don't see justice. It's not carried out like it should be. It's done by how they care about the situation. So we have to be very diligent in talking and discussing and deciding where our future needs to be. But first of all, we need to network with each other. We need to communicate. We need to organize. We need to talk to each other, you know, to bring about some change. And our most powerful tool, yes, is the ballot box. But what gets their attention is boots on the ground. It's walking and talking. Yes, 250,000 plus, half a million plus, a million man march, a million women march, 10 million man march, 100 million man march is what we need to turn this country around, because we need every vote we can get to make this a better place to live. It will never be perfect. No, this union will never be perfect, not at all. It wasn't conceived to be perfect. It was conceived by being imperfect. It was conceived to favor the wealthy and the rich. It wasn't thinking about the middle class, wasn't thinking about the poor, wasn't thinking about the homeless. They were thinking about themselves. So we need to change that mindset in D.C. as we elect these people that go to Congress and try to continue what the country has done from its beginning, and that is make many suffer, few have rewards. That's why there's a top 1% that has about everything, and then the rest of us are fighting and clawing for whatever we can get. And I'll turn this back over to you to hear some more comments, because I'm enjoying myself today. This is wonderful.
Okay, let me go to caller 1650. 1650. I think you're reliving that past. Would like to have your response, caller. 1650, welcome to the Peace Radio.
Yes, sir. Man, greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. My name is Pastor Don G, CEO. I'm loving what I'm hearing. I'm just excited to hear so many powerful men of God telling their story. My whole story is the world is hurting. We got to work together to bring forth change. We can't look at yesterday. We got to move into tomorrow. I love what the brother said prior to me speaking. Tomorrow is everything. And we got to keep working towards a brighter tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you. Great show. I'm really digging it. 100%.
All right. Thank you, Pastor, for your support. And let's go back to our caller, 6029. Caller 6029, we'll bring you back in. One of the things as relates to our theme, reliving our past. And when we look at our past and we look at the political machinery that is structured and set up today, it's the scientific machinery that was structured and set up 100 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago. African people in this country have been limited only to two choices. Either you have to go Democrat or Republican. And going with choices, you really don't get to dictate and nominate the individuals who will so-called lead those two parties. I'm asking you, Carla. At some point in time, is it not insanity to continue to do the same thing and expect something different? Are we not living in the past, caller? Your response. Caller 6029, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes, we can.
You know, I think one of the things we seriously have to think about, we have to think in terms of strategy. Now, if strategy is going to move us to where we need to be, then that is a good strategy. But if strategy is mundane or less effective, then it leads us in the opposite direction. I think one of the problems when you talk about the Democratic-Republican duopoly, let's be very clear on this point. Now, one of the things the previous caller talked about, he talked about in terms of the power of money in the context of capitalist society. Well, if that be true, then one thing we have to certainly understand is that the people in positions of power, those individuals that we elect to represent us, don't truly represent us because what? It's not about the will of the people. It's about the empowerment of themselves. In other words, if they play ball in terms of policies that are favorable to the wealthy, then they're compensated. So it's a kind of one hand washes the other. And so in that context, one of the things we have to understand, if they're beholden to special interests, if they're beholden to money, then why do you think for one second that they're going to carry out the interests of the masses of people? It simply ain't going to happen. So this is a very obsolete, it seems to me in the 21st century, this particular argument should have been put to bed a long, long time ago. But yet people still persist that the solution to our problems lies in participating in a system, which is that makes a post-cell survival. We talk about internalizing certain concepts in terms of the role of money, in terms of defining us as who we are as human beings. Not understanding that if we define ourselves by money in terms of who we are as human beings, then it makes sense that those among us who sell us out for money are doing that which is only rational. So we have to begin to understand that, you know, we have to think seriously about, you know, what we say, the conversations that we take, and the implications of what we say. Simply saying things, you know, because they sound good, or they've been passed along through the ages, is not the kind of strategy that we need in terms of moving forward in society. Particularly the context when we talk about the deconstruction of the capitalist economy. We talk about the disproportion of wealth going to the top 1/10 of 1% of the population, which has a very, very devastating impact on the overall function of the economy. When you think about a situation where you pass tax cuts for corporations to $267 billion, and then you ask yourself, well, if you can give these tax cuts to corporations to $267 billion, then why can't you create affordable housing? Why can't people have jobs? Why can't people afford to eat? Well, clearly, the answer is that priorities are being established by those people in positions of power. And part of those people in positions of power are politicians who sit at the wheels of power, who allow these kind of policies to take place and indeed acquiesce or participate in the passage of these policies. They don't represent the will of the people. Let's be very clear on this point. It seems to me that we shouldn't even discuss this at this point. At this point, it should be simply, what can we do? And this question in terms of money. I think one of the things, let's be clear, one of the things in terms of the rules of the game is to ensure the empowerment of the wealthy at the expense of all others. If that be saying, if you look at the oppressment of nationalities, particularly African people, and you look at the kind of oppression, the kind of systematic oppression that in fact negates our ability in terms of accumulating large sums of wealth, then we understand that the rules of the game are not the same for us as they are for others. In fact, when you look in terms of the ownership of black land in this country, it has been declining since the 1930s. It hasn't been increasing, it's been declining. It's been declining because there's been a conscientious attempt or a conscientious plan by people in positions of power to take that land from African people. It's no mistake. It's no mistake that farmers can't get access to loans. Black farmers can't access to loans. It's no mistake. This is all part of a strategic strategy. And we got to fundamentally understand this. So if we can't bank on, you know, accumulating large sums of money in terms of competing in this capitalist society, then the most intelligent thing to do is to say, well, okay, well, since I can't have this large sum of money to compete in the capitalist society, I use the scant resources I do have in terms of organizing criminal institutions in the community to, one, A, to protect the mindset of our children, B, do those kind of things which is empowerment of our people, even if that means that I may not prosper personally in terms of making profit. But I do so because I understand that in terms of my longevity, in terms of my existence on this planet, hinges upon, you know, how people around me live. And so in that context, I have an overwhelming moral, if not political, responsibility to make sure I look out for other people, because one of the things that we have to understand that this individualist ethos that exists in American society has been internalized by a lot of African people. And because we have internalized the individualism ethos, that we only think that, you know, if it's no good for me, if I can't benefit personally, I'm not interested. And I think it's a kind of mindset is not only kind of productive, but indeed very destructive to aspirations of African people. So I agree that organization is key, but it's based upon a different value system. It cannot be based upon the accumulation of wealth. It cannot be in the context of capitalist system. And I'm curious if maybe your guest could call in and deal with that point. Because one of the things that if you say that the capitalist system, which is diametrically opposed to African people accumulating a material basis in a society, if that be true, then if we internalize those same value systems, how can we reasonably expect that our situation will improve if we can try to play in a game which essentially blocks us from participating in that game? You see, so you're absolutely correct. I think one of the things we have to come to the realization. We have to come to the realization of some fundamental truths in terms of systemic inequality that exists in the society and why those systemic inequalities exist. They're not accidents. This is a historical process. And why we can't get that, I don't know why our people have yet to gravitate toward this historical process and to think that simply voting is in itself sufficient enough to bring about the necessary resolve that we desire, you know, in terms of a more just and more harmonious world. It simply doesn't work that way. So I'm going to close with that, brother. But anyway, thank you for the question.
Thank you for your response, Carlo. Coming back to Brother Moses, are you still with me, Brother Moses? Can you hear me, Brother Moses? Trying to see if we can get Brother Moses back for a second. If not, we'll move forward. Brother Moses, can you hear me? We must have lost him right now. But what we're going to do right now, let's take a station break, and when we come back, I have a real important question I would like everyone to address as it relates to this question. We live in our past. This is the voice of MP Radio, and we don't want you to go nowhere, but we're going to continue to fill in our missing pages of history.
Fly. don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man.
You are an African.
None of mine your nationality. You have got the identity.
You are an African.
Cause if you come from Clarendon,
you are an African.
And if you come from Portland,
you are an African.
And if you come from Westmoreland,
you are an African.
I don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man.
You are an African.
Now mind your nationality, you have got the identity.
You are an African.
Cause if you come from Trinidad,
you are an African.
And if you come from Nassau,
you are an African.
If you come from a Cuba, don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man.
You are an
African. Not mind denomination, that is only segregation.
You are an African.
Cause if you go to the Catholic,
you are,
and if you go to the Methodist,
you are,
and if you go to the Church of God, I don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man.
You are a happy man.
Not my new complexion, there is no rejection.
You are an African.
Call it depression high,
high,
and it's depression low, low,
low, low,
and if it's in between,
you are an African.
I don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man. Now mind your nationality, you have got the identity.
You are an African.
Cause if you come from Brixton,
you are an African.
And if you come from Winston,
you are an African.
Take away everything and make everybody feel high.
That's right. We want you to get up, stand up for your rights. That's the only way you're going to get them. You're going to have to get on down to get on up and stand up for your rights. Welcome back to MPH Radio. And we're going to ask this closing question to all of our participants. We want you to take a few seconds or so and think about it. But we'd like to hear your response as you speak to the rest of the world. As we talk about reliving our past, lessons from the past, and looking at many contradictions in the past, they still exist today. For African people to prioritize their issues and their path forward, if they had prioritized the first and most crucial issue that we must settle, resolve, and speak as oneness, what would that be? If African people had to prioritize the most important issues, what would the first priority be from your perspective? We all must understand that, we must agree collectively and work towards that collectively. So at this point in time, I'd like to hear my pastor, Pastor Don, who's in a position of leadership. How would you respond to the question, but Pastor Don? You've had one single issue that people have prioritized, and we must come together and agree collectively. What would it be?
Education. Education is really big. If we don't know, we can't do better. And through education, we can change the world. If more people in schools, more kids with laptops learning what's going on. The social media, digital age, more money is transferred through Cash App and other different peer-to-peer transaction sources than anyone out there. So I feel education will be a thing that's going to change the world.
Thank you for your response. Again, your support of MPH Radio, Pastor Don. Next, go to Sister Eleanor. What would be your major perspective in prioritization? What would be the one and first key issue that you would think African people need to recognize? Speak as one. Sister Eleanor. Okay, while we wait for Sister Eleanor to come forward and take the mic.
And hello, Brother Africa, I'm
yes,
here.
Yes, Sister Eleanor. Your response, please.
I just wanted to say that tens of thousands of people are attending the March on Washington today, and that in 1963, what Dr. King was hoping was to have John F. Kennedy sign a new proclamation, emancipation, because it was the anniversary, and that this march is not a commemoration, but it's a continuation of the struggle. And it is truly a beautiful thing to watch and see so many thousands of people. I have no way of counting them, but there appears to be tens of thousands of people on that mall. and the struggle continues.
Okay, would you like to respond to my question, Ms. Eleanor?
I didn't hear your question, Brother Africa.
A question was, if you could name one fundamental issue that's the most important in prioritizing the African people must agree to collectively and work towards, all the issues we have, what would be your first priority that we must all come together as a people?
We must come together around the issue of the environment and unity and the importance of collective responsibility to educate, inform, and to guide each other forward. We must organize. We must stand in unity. And that to me is the most important thing. And Mother Earth should be our first priority. She's burning right now for our love and our respect. So it's time that collectively our work and effort to liberate ourselves be around the issue. Right now for African American women and the descendants of chattel slavery, health is the most important issue, in that we have the highest infant mortality.
I said pick one. Right. I said pick only one, Sister Eleanor.
All right,
so
the environment and health for
your feedback
and education. I got three.
We're running out of time, and what we're going to do right now, go to Susie and get her feedback. If she has to highlight one issue at deep priority, the first one, what would you say that we need to all agree upon and work together as a collective?
I would say self-importance. Once we know who we are and what our capabilities and are and everything, then we'll be able to get together and work, and all our importance of each individual comes together, and we can somewhat possibly make some major changes. We got to have self-importance of ourselves. And that carries on to the other individuals that we're working with.
Very interesting, Susan. Thank you for your input. Next, we go to caller 6029. Your response, caller 6029. You have to prioritize one most important. Yes, go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is a belief that we have a right to exist. I think once we come to a fundamental understanding of a right to exist, we'll do the kind of things we need to do to empower ourselves. And that's my response.
Thank you, Carl. And Brother Alex, your response.
Well, we have some wonderful comments there. And again, I have to agree with Susie and also on the issue of self-importance, because I'll never forget the statement that Obama made about him being president. He said, I could have did more. I could have done more when I was in office. That pondered me. Yes, you could have done more, but you had to have thought more of us to have done so. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Alex, and to our listening audience. My response would probably be one particular response, is that I think we as a people, Africans throughout the world, must come and realize that we are not free, period. We are not free. The illusion of this freedom must be eradicated. Once you come to reality, I think other things will quickly and properly fall in place. So what we're going to do at this point in time, we're going to take a quick break. Music with a message. And when we come back, we're going to make some announcements and we'll have a message to the community from Brother Alex. You'll listen to MPH Radio.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
Ah!
Confusion. We'd like to thank you for allowing us to come to your homes this evening on the 26th day of August 2023 as we discuss reliving our past. We'd like to thank our sister from France, Wincy Jandry. We'd like to thank all our listening audience and our participants. And we'd like to remind you that everybody weekly, every other Saturday, you hear MPH Radio on this platform at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S., on Blog Talk Radio. We also would like to remind you that we'll be doing a special program next week. We'll be doing a special tribute to one of our co-founders and members, Emmanuel D. Joyner. We ask you please join in next week at 1 p.m. to be on your calendar. And remind those who live in the Virginia, the state of Virginia, Northern Virginia area, that on every weekend from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 1 a.m. on channel 36 Verizon and channel 95, you can look at some of MPA Throwback live TV programs that have been produced. And if you haven't seen them, please check them out. There's so much you can learn from them. Again, any views or comments you have concerning this station, please write us at mphradio@yahoo.com. We are open to membership and supporters. If you would like to support us, please write us and we will tell you how. So at this point in time, like always, we have a special segment called Alex Speaks to the Community. We're going to turn this mic over now to Alex. And he has a special message for today's program as he speaks to our community. We now will bring Brother Alex back in. Brother Alex speaks to the community.
Well, thank you again. And as Susie pointed out in the beginning of the show about all the things that have happened in the month of August, but Black history is not just a few cutouts here and there saying what the great accomplishments of Africans in this country have done. We have to move past our history and create even more history. But we have to be respectful of what has came in the past. And we have to be respectful of anyone who has an opinion or wants to share opinion, because networking and negotiation is so important in what we encounter in life. And I'm so proud to be associated and to want respect through negotiation and through networking to accomplishing something good for my community. So I call this scene Freedom Park is my park. Some days just feel right. You get out of bed, shower, and have breakfast. You go to work and talk to friends and coworkers. You check your phone and email accounts or messages, and you settle into a good feeling of how great it is to be alive and in good health. The sun is shining, not a cloud in sight. No bad news on the radio or from a TikTok. It's feeling groovy, man. Today, after all is done, I ask myself, how about a walk in the park? Not just any park, but a downtown park, a park designed especially for me. For over 20 years, a vision was made and a plan came forth. Right away, it was opposed. It cost too much. The land area desired was too large. The maintenance, we have enough parks already. Why do you need your own park to relax? It simply can't be done. Maybe we're some of the first rejections to a great idea. This idea for a park had never been envisioned before. Just naming the park must have been a battle and hotly debated. As Black citizens, when we want something done for African Americans, your community, to show love, our history, military achievements, invention, entrepreneurship, and leadership, we are led to the back of the bus. In 2000, a bold group of North Carolinians got together by the Paul Green Foundation to ponder, what are we doing in North Carolina to celebrate emancipation and freedom? From this ecstatic beginning, a nonprofit organization was formed to plan and build a commemorative park in downtown Raleigh. Tireless, they worked to make this dream come true. Some are no longer living. They gave their money, time, ideas, and devotion to this massive project. I will attempt to give all involved a citizen thank you, a thought well conceived, and a job well done. There's no better place than a good quiet park at daybreak. Freedom. Many years ago, when I was a child, there was forced segregation of the races and African Americans could not go to the wonderful white city park. My partner and me had one swing that was intact with a seat. The others were broken, and only the ropes were there. The sliding board steps were broken, and the sandbox had no sand. The monkey bar set had collapsed to the ground, and the water fountain didn't work. The grass was seldom cut, and trash was everywhere. There was little concern by my city council caring about the children's safety in the black community where I lived. Then we learned in school about the John Chavis Park in Raleigh, North Carolina. It was a talk of the school among us kids, and they even advertised the upcoming trip on the office bulletin board. Our park did not have a carousel or a pool. No main structures or vendors who sold candy, popcorn, hot food, or ice cream. I was selected to be a group leader to keep an eye on 10 kids with my teacher. Upon arriving in Raleigh at the park near Shaw University, we were all told how to act and behave and not to embarrass our school with pushing, fighting, and talking loud. We all agreed to be on our best behavior. The bus finally stopped, and we were told to get off. We almost tore the doors off the bus to get out. Over 45 wild, screaming kids ran all over the park and had fun all day, shouting, running, laughing, and eating is what I mostly remember. Riding back home, after being full of fun and food, I glanced over and saw my teacher had already fell asleep like most of the kids. The bus ride was full of snores all the way back to my school. Getting off the bus, we began to make a lot of noise again, as we all happy to share a day of freedom from schoolwork and homework and to enjoy a simple park built in 1937 just for us. I have held on those memories for years, and I never felt I would ever feel the same about a park. Then I had someone mentioned in the barber shop in Raleigh, where I now live, about a park to be built. Not just any park, but a park for us. I hadn't heard that expression since I was a child. I got excited again. I moved over 3 seats closer to the man who was talking. I didn't butt in or interrupt him. I listened closely to the details. As again, he mentioned, a park for us. I smiled after he finished talking and thanked him for the information, and then I started doing my own research on a park for us. I found out that a dedicated team of citizens and supporters were raising money for the park's planning and construction. The nonprofit needed volunteers and assistants to make input on design and meaning to make the vision a reality. The numerous foundations, businesses, individuals, and the North Carolina General Assembly came together like I have never seen on any other project and got it done. When I found out that Mr. Philip Freeland of the architectures from Perkins and Will was involved in the project, I knew they were serious about the park. Mr. Freeland was the leader of the design team of the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. He laid out the design of the 5 pathways to a golden 45-foot tall beacon of freedom to be the center of the park that would be lit at dusk each evening. Mm-hmm. To stand there and see it lit for the first time was so awesome. Well done, Brother Freeland, a master craftsman of his trade, who has passed from us well too soon. half of Mr. Freeland's passing in 2019, Ms. Zena Howard became the leader and inspiration that the project would be completed. The lead contractor was the black company, Hope Brothers Construction, who worked with Perkins and Wheel and the State Construction Office and the North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources and other state advisors. I have to mention that the North Carolina African American Heritage Commission will manage the park with assistance from the Friends of the North Carolina Freedom. I cannot personally thank all those who donated their ideas, time, money, and other resources to this project. You did a job that many said could not be done. You did a job that many did not want done. You accomplished a feat that was God's plan. This was a plan that couldn't be stopped or destroyed by anyone. This was a job well done by all involved. As I stood there and all of the speakers and the originators of the park and later shaking hands and taking people with these great folks of freedom, I thought of the togetherness we shared at that moment of all races that stood there and heard the speeches of why the park, though it was dirt, brick, stone, and metal, sitting on just over an acre, but it was spread out over the nation as the first park donated to African Americans' freedom. This park would reflect a testimony to the human resolve that a great people were kidnapped in chains and were sold as stock and goods, but had defied their bonds and had risen up to freedom. We must never forget the ancestors' suffering and abuse. The millions who will visit this park will find peace and history among the oaks and the many inscriptions called the Voices of Freedom as they pass through the walkways. Then we move center focus of the park. Those bronze beacons that tower to the sky. What an idea and concept from a great man to show our greatness. Majestic is what it is. Showing resolve, power, innovation, spirit, and togetherness of all who gather here for knowledge and respect. This is a site of homage and inspiration as it was intended to be. This is a monument for a people seeking freedom and emancipation. The story begins here, but the conversation must never end here. Freedom is fought for every day by someone. I look years back to a time when many were in the midst of the civil rights struggle, and they found no park for peace, no bench to sit on to rest their weary bones. No cool water to drink from a fountain nearby to quench their thirst. All they knew was work and family, being a good citizen and contributing to society. The world has not changed. There's still land, water, and air. Time itself has not changed. As the day starts with the sun up and ends with the moonlight. Only the feelings of man have changed. His compassion and love has grown weaker. His humanity for others is being led astray. His love for the planet is lost. He sees the moon as his next trash dump. Today, though as I stand here in the park, I want to holler and yell. I want to run about the oak trees and climb the stone wall and have a good time. To watch the flame lit in the beacon and play in the dirt among the plants. But if I did that, someone may say I was crazy. I will come back, though many a time, to sit with a book or the Bible and just be thankful and grateful that someone made it part, especially for me. I cannot express enough how the speeches were well tailored for this event. A marvelous job by North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, Dr. Reginald Hildebrand, a member of the Freedom Park Board of Directors, Andrea O'Neill, the director of the North Carolina African American Heritage Commission, and so many others that I do not have time to name. Thank you for an outstanding achievement for the community. Maybe I will come back on a school day just to see how the children react. Maybe I will join them and smiling and having a good time learning history about a part made especially for them to last the ages. And again, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Lee. I'd like to thank the panel. I'd like to thank all the callers in. And I thank everyone because that's what we need, respect and dignity for each other. Compassion and love. And I give it back to you.
Thank you, Alice, for your contribution to today's program. We'd like to thank all of our participants and our special feature guest, Sister Wincy Gendry of France, for her commentating on and sharing her experiences of perspectives out of France, and from time to time, we invited this young lady to be a contributor to MPH Radio. And if you would like to participate and join us as well, please feel free to email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. So until next time, next week, we'll be doing a special program in tribute and honor our brother Emmanuel D. Joyner, who was a co-founder of this particular radio show and a key foundation of helping to build Mission Page of History. So we will give our respect to him next week. We ask you to come and join us. Remind you that on the weekends, if you live in the Virginia area, Richmond, Northern Virginia area, please check out our radio program, our TV program that comes on Verizon on Channel 36. And Comcast on Channel 95 at 1 a.m. on weekends. That's on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. So until next time, like always, we will continue to travel down the road of freedom. And in doing so, we will continue filling our missing pages of history so that people will have a map and a guide for those who come after us to continue to move forward. Until next time, we thank you for allowing us to come to your homes this evening. This has been MPH Radio, and we want you to remember that we, too, are here for you. We'll see you next week. We are all here for you. MPH Radio.
Let's talk about my town. Let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about father when it comes from. How we gonna save the nation with no support for education? Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart touch your heart. Let's talk about living. Had enough of dying. That's what we all about. Let's do more giving. Do more forgiving. Yeah. Our souls are brought together so that we could love each other. Sisters, we